In the construction business and can't find what you need, Quality Supply and Tool has served Hoosiers for over a quarter of a century. Tom Hawk is the branch manager of the Indy location on South Harding Street.
We've always been big on keeping our shelves fully stocked of inventory of industrial-grade tools, concrete, masonry products, as well as the necessary accessories to help get the job done. You don't have it, you can't sell it. Our experience allows us to help with getting the pros as well as the weekend pro taken care of.
Quality Supply and Tool also has locations in Bloomington and Jeffersonville to help you think outside the box. Store.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with jQuery and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5. The Fan.
Another good evening to you in the month of May. Greatest race in the world, greatest month of the year in this our fair city. My name is jQuery. Mike Thompson here as well. Landon Coons helping us put it all together. It is Beyond the Bricks from the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center as we talk about the personalities, the backstories of the history, the heritage of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Mike, on this, the 2nd of May, I think that each year we have kind of paid tribute to this, understandably and, you know, respectfully so, of course. This is the day in 1977 when we lost Sid Collins. And when you talk about the Indianapolis 500-mile race, and certainly if you're talking about the personalities among those that never actually strapped into a car and turned a lap, I don't know that you would find anybody that was more significant, not named Tony Holman perhaps, than Sid Collins in terms of the promotion and the branding of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, when we did the 10 most influential non-drivers show that we did, which is a bit cumbersome title, but we did that for WIBC. I mean, Sid made the list. Donald Davidson, our friend Donald, made the list. You know, those are the people who, you know, they have made such an incredible impact off the track. And Sid, worldwide, was a household name. I mean, people knew Sid Collins. He might not have been a racing fan, but you knew who Sid Collins was because he was the voice of the 500 and his voice was going around the world, you know, and that's how we got Donald. Donald heard Sid Collins, you know, in England, and he got hooked, you know, listening to Sid Collins. So Sid had an incredible, incredible impact.
And, you know, we talk so much about exactly that, Mike, the fact that the Indianapolis 500, I think a lot of people perhaps, for those that are newer to it or don't understand its place within the American culture, the reality is that in the mid-20th century, particularly coming out of the war when Tony Holman bought the Speedway itself, as I have always said it, the vast majority of Americans, either their livelihood or their leisurehood was centered around the automobile and the innovation of the automobile, and then the ultimate display case of the automobile was, in fact, the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But for those that weren't able to travel to Indianapolis, and of course before you had, as we have talked about numerous times within this program, the television coverage of the Indianapolis 500, and until the mid-80s, it wasn't even live television coverage. So it was the radio and the illustration, the tapestry that was laid out for people via the spoken word that allowed them to envision what it was that was taking place that was such an important part of their lifestyle with the automobile. And Sid Collins, Mike, clearly was the guy that was putting that all together.
Absolutely. And so critical to the popularity. I mean, think about how the popularity skyrocketed after the creation of the radio network. I mean, that was such a critical element to, you know, adding stations every year and then adding the, you know, the worldwide audience. And that was a lot of work from Sid. I mean, I don't think Sid gets enough credit. We know him as the voice. We know him as the chief announcer, but we don't think necessarily of all the work he did behind the scenes with Gil Berry and all these different guys, you know, getting more stations. You know, you can, you know, several times you can hear him during the race broadcast. You can write to me if you like the race, let us know how you like it and everything, and drop me a line at this address. And he was just very good at outreaching to the world and trying to make the Indianapolis 500 more popular. And he succeeded. He, you know, the race got more and more popular every year that after the 500 radio network was formed.
We have honored Sid Collins each year that we have done this program. The reality is if we do it for another 100 years, it would merit doing an honor of him each of those 100. But he was born on July 17th of 1922 as Sidney Kahn before he would take the stage name, if you will, the radio name of Sid Collins. And he was also a veteran who served in World War II. He became a very popular figure throughout the city of Indianapolis, both in representing different organizations and businesses in town, in print advertisements, also being the master of ceremonies for just about any event that took place in Indianapolis. But before all of that, after serving in World War II, he started in radio at WKMO in Kokomo, Indiana. For those not familiar, that's a small town, roughly 50 miles or so directly to the north of Indianapolis. Very shortly after that, he would work at WIBC Radio as the MC of the PM Party. And he'd only been there a year when he got his very first chance to broadcast the Indianapolis 500 for the Mutual Broadcasting System, which it is that aspect of his career we will focus on tonight. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, of course, is at the corner of 16th and Georgetown in Indianapolis. It runs 5/8 of a mile from turns 1 and 2, 5/8 of a mile to the north, to turns 3 and 4. So that area between turns 1 and 2 is known as the south end of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, or the south turn. And in 1948, it was in that location of the track where Sid Collins made his radio debut for the 500-mile race. And one of the things that's interesting in listening to that call from 1948, Rex Mays was the pole sitter of that race that took place on May 31st of 1948. It was the 32nd running of the Indy 500. And the reality is, Mike, and I think we forget about this, that tapestry that I discussed, the theater of the mind, you heard some of the colorful terminology that Sid Collins used there. We forget that in 1948, they weren't going around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway at 230 miles an hour. And so as a result of that, there was more time for the broadcasters in the turns and other areas to illustrate what it was that they were seeing. And few did it better than Sid Collins.
That's right. And what you also have to remember is, you know, you had to get in what you wanted to say because you may not get that many opportunities because Mutual, people may or may not remember, Mutual didn't do the entire race live the way we know what you guys do at the IMS Radio Network today. They didn't do that. That wasn't their format. So from 1939, when Mutual took over the race on radio, until 1950, what they would do is they'd come on the air, they'd set the scene, they'd do the start of the race, and then they'd sign off. And they'd come back an hour later for a few minute update and say, okay, we're, you know, 40 laps into the race and here's who's leading and here's who's dropped out. And then they'd sign off again and they'd just go back to regular program. And then they'd come back at the end to do the finish. So when you had an opportunity to thing as Sid did there. You wanted to make a count, and you could tell Sid, you know, thought about it and really wanted to say something meaningful, because, you know, you didn't know how many times you were going to get a chance to speak.
That race in 1948 took just over 4 hours and 10 minutes. There was an opportunity on the Mutual broadcast to come back and have Sid Collins give another report of the 1948 race.
Pick him up, Sid Collins. Until here he comes in his white car. Number 5, Rex Mays. Number 2, number 3, number 161-74. That was Rex Mays, Bill Holland, Roy Rose, Jimmy Dutch, and Doc Williams. In that particular order, as they come around the south turn, where a driver's skill is exercised more probably than anywhere else in the track. We'll be watching throughout the afternoon to see exactly how these men, their precious mouths, go around these turns. They're now streaming up the back stretch. The asphalt, where they gain speed, they're hitting close to the north. East turn at this time, where life and death are weighed in the balance of how expertly the drivers execute these turns. Take it, Jim.
And down at our south turn is Sid Collins, and I think Sid had a fair view of what happened when Carter's car threw that wheel. Come in, Sid Collins.
We certainly had a wonderful view here, Bill Slater. Dwayne Carter, driving number 16, was coming out of the southeast turn. He lost his left rear wheel. The car then spun completely around approximately 4 times at the lower part of the track. The wheel, meanwhile, bounced once and then flew over the southeast retaining wall, missing the jam-packed stands of about several thousand people by about 300 feet. Meanwhile, Ted Horn's car in the lead at that time was directly behind Carter. And as the wheel carried through the air, Ted Horn, apparently with a rabbit's foot in one hand and a fistful of four-leaf clovers in the other, drove under the wheel, which was flying through the air. The car has now been removed from the track. The green light is on again, and we've seen a brilliant display of driving by Dwayne Carter on three wheels. Now back once again to the pagoda.
And, of course, Maury Rose would go on for the second straight year to win that race in 1948. Sid Collins reporting on the south end of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He was back in the south turn in 1949, and it didn't take long for Sid Collins to have more action to report.
Now we're going to move around the track to give you just a little view of what these men can see at various spots. They're commencing to roll these cars. No, here goes the pace lap. They're starting the race early today. Here goes the pace lap. There goes Duke Nalen, Rex Mays, Jack McGrath in formation in the first line. Now Bill Holland, Carter, Connor. The next line, Jackson, Lynch, Mance. The next line, Rose, Cole, Parsons. Four in the next line, Hellings and Dinsmore. Now they're finishing the trip down the straightaway. This is just the pace lap. They'll make a flying start after they come around. And we take you into the south turn now, and Sid Collins.
All right, Bill Slater, here they come around the southwest turn. 32 times before, this pace car has left the field around the end of the southwest turn into the south straightaway as the drivers get the feel of their cars. On some, Lady Luck will shine just as the sun is shining this very moment. Rainbow color mingles with the asphalt of the 660-foot south straightaway directly in front of us. Today there are seasoned veterans in these cars, as well as some youngsters trying their wings for the first time. Here comes the entire pace lap, the 33 cars in front of us. There goes the main automobile pace car. Just a few moments, they start the 200 trips around this magnificent speedway course. George Lynch in 26 adjusts his goggles. Jack McGrath grits his teeth as they pass us here. Now the spectators in the back stretch are going to get their first glimpse of the splendorous procession. So for a verbal view of the back stretch, back to the pagoda.
There goes Rex Mays. There they go on the first lap, now into the south turn. Come in, Sid Collins, on the south turn.
And as they come around the south turn, directly in front of our broadcasting booth, right down the south straightaway, it's number 84, Duke Taylor, followed by Rex Mays, followed by Carter, Jack McGrath, Bill Holland, and George Connor. They're going down to the south turn. High stretch, take it, Gene Kelly.
But they've successfully negotiated the first lap. I counted 32 cars as they went by here, although I see Seth Klein is moving out here toward the starting line. He has his caution flag out there. But whether that'll apply to them when they come around at the end of the second lap or not, I don't know. I think there's been a bit of an accident down near the south turn there. Gene Kelly, can you see anything down there through your long glasses?
How about it, Sid? You're on the south turn. Anything happen? The caution light is on.
You can see it perfectly, Gene. Number 26, the car driven by George Lynch, went into a spin high on the southwest turn. It spun down off the track, into the dirt, on the grass. Duke Nalen was in first position as they went by. Lynch was back about 15 cars. He stepped out of his car. Seems to be in perfect physical shape. The ambulance has arrived and the record. Now back to Gene Kelly.
I'm going to swing around the track now and pick up any further information that's come in down on the south turn. Let's see what Sid Collins can see for us down there on that dangerous south turn. How's it now down there, Sid?
Everything's running smoothly down here, Bill. George Lynch's car, the Auto Shipper Special, modified about 128 miles, is now completely immobilized off the track, on the grass, and lots of the rail birds are hanging over the fence watching this, which, of course, is the most action we've seen so far in the race on this particular batting point. 26, the bright orange automobile, completely smashed in at the front, on the right, also on the left. We think it hit the wall. We saw it as it spun down. Up there in the tire and skid marks, it did hit the wall and spun down directly in front of the path of three oncoming cars. They swung up high and it won. Lynch was thrown. The car hung onto the side while the car grounded and stopped down the way. That's all from South Turn right now. Back to Bill Slater in the Pagoda.
And again, a lot more time and detail in the way that they moved things around. But as it would wind down, that race in 1949 that took place on May 30th of that year, that was the 33rd, of course, Indianapolis 500-mile race. Sid had a chance to report again from the south turn in that 1949 race as it started to conclude.
And it's a certainty, too, that Maury Rose, who was within just a few hundred yards of establishing all-time records here at the Speedway when his car spun on the south turn, is going to be denied the privilege of being the first man to win at Indianapolis four times and the first man to win three times in a row. Maury Rose, here's another bulletin on him, was stalled on the backstretch in his 192nd lap. That's after he tried to get down the backstretch after spinning on the south turn. And a wrecker is towing him in now, and that's the end of number three, the Lou Moore car, driven by Maury Rose, and it's the end of Maury Rose's challenge. I think down there on the south turn, where this important spin on the part of Maury Rose took place, very likely Sid Collins, our observer down there, was able to tell us exactly what happened, so I'm going to switch you down to Sid for a minute. Sid?
Yes, Bill, as Maury Rose came out of the southwest turn, his car developed engine trouble. We could see Maury right in the seat of the car as he passed our top straightaway broadcasting booth. He was biting his lip and pushing himself forward in the seat of the car, like to say, go, go, go. I'd like to get behind and push, but I can't. They got him a southeast turn. His car was still coughing along. Got to the south straightaway, where, as you've already reported, his car then stalled. Now back to Bill Slater.
That's how it sounded in 1949. Bill Holland would go on to win the race that year. Sid Collins would go on to much, much more fame and presumably fortune within his job in broadcasting the Indianapolis 500-mile race, moving to the Pagoda and catapulting into stardom. We will get to that and continue discussing and taking a look back at Sid Collins on this episode of Beyond the Bricks.
The construction industry in Indiana has depended on Quality Supply and Tool, a local family-owned business, to deliver quality sales and service over the last 25 years. The employees make the difference, like sales expert Nick Worley.
What sets us apart is we only offer quality tools and supplies from quality manufacturers. We have a quality trained sales and service staff knowledgeable of the products we sell and offer. Quality. It's in our name.
On South Harding Street in Indy, plus Bloomington and Jeffersonville, Quality Supply and Tool thinks outside the box. Store.
Penguins can't fly. Ostriches can't fly. And if your Florida license or ID card isn't Real ID compliant by May 7th, then neither can you. Real ID compliant licenses and ID cards feature a gold star in the upper right corner. If yours doesn't have one by May 7th, you can't board commercial aircraft or gain access to any federal facilities. To obtain a Real ID for the first time, you must visit a driver's license service center in person. For full details, visit flhsmv.gov/realid. Paid for by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Beyond the Bricks here. You may be listening to it at 93.5, 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis. You may be listening to it in podcast form, which, Mike, I am always appreciative, as I know you are as well. We should probably give a salute to those that might be on a treadmill, might be out for a walk, maybe doing something, driving somewhere while listening to us, maybe not even in the month of May as this is airing in 2025. I am most appreciative, as I know you are as well, Mike, for not only those that take the time to listen to this program throughout the course of the year, make it possible for us to do it, but also those that have been nice enough to reach out to us.
Absolutely. And in fact, I had a guy, a family, a couple people who came up to me at the memorabilia show last year and said, we save all of the Beyond the Bricks episodes for our drive. And they drive from Atlanta to Indianapolis for race weekend. And he said, we save all of the episodes to listen to in order on our marathon drive. And I thought that was just so cool. I was just thinking about it. And I'm like, wait, these people actually, you know, they plan around listening to the Beyond the Bricks show. It is really cool that people reach out and listen on podcasts, and absolutely happy to hear from everybody who enjoys the show.
They might be listening to us right now as they drive through Chattanooga, one of my favorite cities. By the way, in 1950, Sid Collins was an established star in Indianapolis for WIBC, and that was back before, Mike, people were able to listen to Sid Collins on podcasts throughout the course of the year. They had to listen on the 50,000-watt blowtorch radio station that was 1070 AM WIBC in Indianapolis, which is where Sid Collins was in 1950, and he was getting more opportunities with the mutual broadcasting system that we heard, where he had worked in 1948 and 1949 in the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But leading up to the race, he would host a nightly show called Speedway Gossip, which was not necessarily about who was dating who or who had been seen somewhere at a hot spot on Crawfordsville Road, but rather kind of an early version, if you will, of Trackside with Kevin and Kevin that you hear on this radio station, discussing what was happening within the business, the inner workings, the teams of the Indianapolis 500-mile race and racing in general. And it was on that show when he got a chance to introduce fans to a number of different drivers, including some future winners. Here is Sid Collins speaking with drivers as part of those broadcasts for Mutual in 1950.
Now, Sam, will you step over here, please, and let's meet you. Sam did 131.593 in the Mertz Engineering Special. You had me kind of confused when I saw that car name today, Sam. I had you down for a different car. When did the switch come about?
Well, as usual, it always comes about the last day or the day before the last of qualifying here in Indianapolis. Standard procedure with me, Sid.
Which one were you scheduled for first?
Nat Rounds, his rear engine car this year.
That was the REC Special, is that correct?
That's right.
And what caused the change, may we ask her? Is that...
She just wouldn't go quick enough.
You wanted to go 131.593 anyway.
Well, I think I'll settle for that very, very happily.
Sam, what do you do the rest of the year when you're not here? Are you a dirt track driver, too?
No, I drive midgets nearly all the time, Sid. Had very good success and won the National Midget Championship standing last year.
And you've driven here at Indianapolis before then?
Since 1940.
What's the best you've placed here?
Fifth, when I relieved Joy Chitwood in 1946.
Wish you a lot of luck this year, Sam.
Thanks a lot, Sid.
Here comes Spinner, Wallard. We called him Flip for a while, and now it's a Spinner. But you didn't spin today, Lee. Congratulations.
No, I'm very happy that I didn't.
So are we. 132.436. You should have let that thing out a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you, Sid, we did have a couple of weak cylinders, and the boss is putting a new block on it right now.
Now, what's this talk about weak cylinders?
Well, we kicked her over on the jacks just before we went out, and we had two cylinders that just weren't strong, that's all. And he's putting a fresh block on it right now.
You wanted to give the other boys a chance and just go on two of them?
No, I'm really serious
okay.
About that. I'm happy that I did get around that fast with under the condition.
We just kid Lee because he's such a good sport, and he's been taking a lot of ribbing on that spinning last week. Well, the Blue Crown Special felt okay then, huh?
Yes, it does. It handles good, and I'm sure we'll do all right in the race.
Lee, what's the best you've done here in finishing at the 500?
I finished seventh in 1948.
The hitting special?
That's right. And last year, I led the race for 19 laps and went out with clutch trouble.
Back to the humorous side of racing for a moment. Where'd you get that shirt?
I got that out in Culver City, California.
Is that a spotted leopard shirt? Is that what?
Well, it looks like one.
And cap to match.
Yeah, that's right. And the reason I don't wear it to drive in a race car, I'm afraid somebody will shoot me on that backstretch.
Might think you're one of wild animal hunting or something. Thanks very much, Lee Wallard, and good luck to you on
Thank
race
you,
day.
Sid.
Yes, indeed. Then we had Joe James, who qualified at 124.170 in the Bob Eastus V8 Special. And we saw Joe down the pit wall a few moments ago, and he was informed that his car had been bumped by a faster car that qualified just before 6 o'clock, and that was Gene Hartley, who went around at 129.213. And so Joe's Bob Eastus V8 Special will not be in the Memorial Day race this year. However, Joe James tells us he is looking around for another car, and he may be on hand Memorial Day if he can qualify tomorrow at a faster speed in some other car. Then Jim Rathman was the sixth one to qualify at 129.959. line in the Pioneer Auto Special, car number 76. And for some more excitement this afternoon, Andy Linden tore around here and went into the backstretch spin and hit an inside guardrail. And the little Bellinger Special, driving car number 99, Andy wasn't able to qualify this afternoon. Let's see who's coming in here, Jimmy. Jackie Holmes, that's the one I was bringing up next, who qualified seventh at 129.697 in the Norm Olson Special. Jackie, you had that six-wheeler out here recently, didn't you? Was that last year?
Yeah, last year.
Is this the same car with less wheels?
No, this is a different car altogether. Jim Davies is driving the six-wheeler, or what's left of it.
That has four wheels on it now,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, how'd your car, the Norm Olson Special, feel to you today, Jackie?
Well, about as good as ever.
And that's pretty good?
It didn't handle so good today.
Well, do you think you got all the speed you could, or did you kind of hold it down a little bit because it didn't feel...
Yeah, that's all I could get out of it.
You think that's good enough?
I hope it is.
Well, we hope so, too, Jackie. Where's your hometown?
Indianapolis.
Well, good. Another hometown boy here, along with Cliff Griffith and Jimmy Jackson and some of the other fellas. Mm-hmm. Did you go to Tech High School, too?
Yes.
Does Tech develop all the race drivers from Indianapolis?
I don't know. It looks like it.
Seems that all of them have that Tech banner behind them. Well, Jackie, good luck to you on May 30th.
Thanks, Sid.
Thank you very much.
Sid Collins with the overly loquacious Jackie Holmes there. You did hear Sam Hanks, who would go on to win the Indianapolis 500 in 1957. Lee Wallard, as you heard Sid reference, would go on to win the race after that interview from 1950. Of course, he would win it in 1951. Reality is, Mike, that Sid, you could hear in doing those interviews and in doing with Jackie Holmes, you know, oftentimes when somebody gives short answers, it's up to a broadcaster's talent or skill to be able to jump in immediately and continue things flowing. You could see that natural skill in Sid Collins there. And Sid thought that would mean that he would be kind of the master of ceremonies of the race broadcast itself that year. But Mike, disappointment would come Sid Collins' way in 1950.
Yeah, actually, Sid was scheduled to be the voice, if you will, the chief announcer in 1950 for Mutual. And that was going to really be his big break. He was going to be the main voice for the entire broadcast because Bill Slater, Mutual's main announcer, was ill that year. And basically, they said, you know, hey, Bill Slater's not going to make it and, you know, make it out here. I mean, he wasn't terminally ill or anything, but he's not going to make it out here this year. So it's going to be up to you to do it. And they gave him the opportunity and he was very excited about it, was really preparing for that opportunity. And that literally at the last minute, Bill Slater showed up at the track to do the race and Sid was crestfallen. I mean, this was Sid's big break and big opportunity. And I guess the way I understand it, I'm talking to Donald a little bit about this, is Slater recognized the fact that Sid was really disappointed that he wasn't going to get his chance to be the chief announcer. And so Slater, you know, kind of put an arm around him and said, hey, kid, let's just do it together then. And so he invited Sid into the pagoda to be sort of a co-anchor with him. So Sid did get a much better opportunity than he would have gotten, but he didn't get a chance to be the actual chief announcer in 1950 as he had planned.
But that first opportunity for him to kind of co-anchor, if you will, showed itself when it was time to do the starting lineup, the 1950 lineup, as it appeared on radio with Sid Collins.
Now here in the pagoda with me is Sid Collins, a top Midwestern sports broadcaster. And Sid's going to give you just a little bit of the lineup. He's going to give you the entire information as to the lineup of the 33 cars who have taken their places down on the track here now. Sid Collins, or do you want to bring in Jimmy Melton singing Back Home Again in Indiana?
I think we better get a rundown of the cars right now, Bill. Walt Faulkner in the pole position at 134.343 has set a new track record, smashing Ralph Hepburn's previous record for a pole position, is in the pole spot from Long Beach, California, in car number 98. In the front row in the middle, Freddie Agavation, number 28 from Albany, California. Then Maury Rose, three-time winner of the race, in car number 31 from South Bend, Indiana. In the second row in the inside spot behind the pole car is George Conner, number 5 of Los Angeles, California. Then Johnny Parsons, AAA 1949 champion, car number 1 from Van Nuys, California. Followed by Jack McGrath on the outside of the second row in car number 49 from South Pasadena, California. In the third row, Duke Dinsmore, car number 69 from Dayton, Ohio. Followed by Tony Bettenhausen, number 14 from Tinley Park, Illinois, a farm boy from there. Joey Chitwood in car number 17 from Reading, Pennsylvania, takes the outside spot on the third row. In the fourth row, last year's winner, Bill Holland, car number 3 from Miami, Florida. Pat Flaherty in the inside of the fourth row in car number 59 from Glendale, California. Then Cecil Green, a rookie driver, in car number 54 from Houston, Texas. In the fifth row, Dwayne Carter, number 18 from Culver City, California, followed by Spider Webb, who couldn't get started last year in car number 21 from Bell, California. Then Jerry Hoyt, the youngest boy in the driving seat, age 21, in car number 81 from Indianapolis, Indiana. In the sixth row, Myron Ford, second in the AAA championship ratings in 1949 from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Bayless Leverett, number 24 from Glendale, California, followed by Dick Rathman in the Cinderella car from Alhambra, California. In the seventh row, Paul Russo, number 7 from Hammond, Indiana. Walt Brown, number 4 from Long Island, New York. Then Henry Banks in car number 12 from Compton, California. In the 8th row, Bill Schindler, 67, Long Island, New York. Lee Wallard and Troy Ruttman. In the 9th row, Sam Hanks, Mac Hellings, and Jimmy Davies. In the 10th row, Jim Rathman, Dick's brother, followed by Walt Ader and Jackie Holmes, who drove the 6-wheeler last year. In the 11th row, Gene Hartley, Jimmy Jackson, the Cummins Diesel Special, and Johnny McDowell, who was the last man to make the lineup and qualifications last Sunday. Once again, here's Bill Slater.
And eventually, Bill Slater, working in that kind of tag team effort, if you will, Mike, it's not to say, even though Sid Collins was disappointed to not be he that was anchoring, quote unquote, the race itself, Mike, there were still plenty of opportunities for Bill Slater to incorporate Sid into the broadcast in that race.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Sid had several opportunities, and if you notice, if you listen to those broadcasts, he does give Sid more opportunities than he gave Gene Kelly, perhaps, in the years before that and a couple of the other guys. So, I mean, he definitely, I think, looked at it as more of a co-anchor situation with Sid. And I think that was really appreciated by Sid, that he was going to get really a fair chance and not, hey, here's Sid at the beginning of the race and hit Sid at the end of the race and he doesn't get to speak again the whole rest of the time.
The 1950 Indianapolis 500, May 30th of that year, the 34th running, Sid Collins doing some of the commentary for that race broadcast in 1950.
I'm going to be checking over here because I want to read down the list of entries of the men who have entered these cars in just a moment. But before I do that, I'd like to turn to Sid Collins and see if there's anything particular he's picked up as they complete the third lap of this 200-mile lap race here at Indianapolis. Sid, picked up anything?
Yes, indeed, Bill. First of all, there were three cars that weren't able to get underway for the pace lap right away. In fact, by the time the cars reached the south turn, Walt Ader in the Sampson Special, car number 27, was still back here in his particular row getting ready to get started and couldn't seem to get that car underway. Walt was back in the middle of the 10th row in 29th position. Roy Rose is still leading the pack. The Blue Crown Specials are pretty well bunched up together. There goes Jerry Hoyt, the youngest driver in the race, and other Blue Crown entries. Car number 8, driven by Lee Wallard, one of the rear drive cars. The Blue Crown, two front drive, two rear drive teams, is trailing Bettenhausen, Holland, and Connor, the other three entries in that particular pack. Duke Dinsmore had some trouble getting started and is now rather far back in the pack, and the Cummins Diesel Special is settling down to holding back behind the rear of the other cars as well. Dwayne Carter in the Bellinger Special, number 18, had difficulty getting started, which made the total of three, but now is underway and all cars are running. And unusually enough, in spite of the tremendous speed they started this race off, not a single car has come in on the first or second lap, which sometimes happens. Bill, do you have these lined up now?
And if Rose can win today, he will be the first man in the history of the 500-mile track here at Indianapolis to win four times in this great Memorial Day Classic. As things stand now, going into the ninth lap, we're about halfway through the ninth lap. Rose is still out in front. In second position is Johnny Parsons. In third position is Fred Agabasian. And in fourth position is Walt Faulkner. Now I'm going to turn over to Sid Collins here to see if he's picked up any highlights of the early moments of this race here at Indianapolis. Sid?
Bill, I've been watching in particular the official starter over there, Seth Klein. And this has been a very clean race with completely perfect control of the cars because as yet, the starter, Seth Klein, has only had to fly the blue and orange flag one time to even signify to move over for passing. So that bespeaks very well of the caution and the integrity of these drivers here on the track. Now Freddie Agabation is getting that flag as Walt Faulkner closes in on him as they go into the south turn. And the three Blue Crowns are very close together in the order of 5, 14, and 3, which is George Conner, followed by Tony Bettenhausen, and last year's winner, Bill Holland. And Lee Wallen is trailing that particular team of those four very favorite Blue Crowns. Special. Bill?
Here's the dope on the lap money so far. The first 10 laps were led by Maury Rose, and he's picked up $1,000. The next laps were ridden by Johnny Parsons, the next 50, and he's picked up $5,000. They got $100 for every lap they're in the lead here. Now, here's Sid Collins up in the pagoda with some more observations on the progress of this great race. Sid?
Thank you, Bill. One of the things I've noticed here is the fact that at the end of 50 laps or 125 miles, Johnny Parsons was leading, Maury Rose was second. The same thing at 60 laps or 150 miles, and the same at 70 laps or 175 miles. The boy who's made the greatest gain is that car driven by Jack McGrath, the Hinkle Special, who at 125 miles was in seventh place, moved
moved up to third at the end of 150 miles, and then at 175 is still in third position. And Jack McGrath, this is the third race for him here at Indianapolis, finished in place 21st in 48 and placed 26th in 49. It is the fastest qualification speed for his engine size in the race's history last year, 129.884. Encountered mechanical trouble early this year after winning a starting position in the front row last year. So there's a man to watch, Jack McGrath in car number 49 in the Hinkle Special.
That 1950 race would go 138 laps before rain would call it. That would declare Johnny Parsons the winner. It was just the second time in the history of the event that rain would be the reason that it would stop short of its intended starting goal. 1926 was the other year. Perhaps that's the reason why everybody was a little bit cantankerous. Perhaps not everybody, but in victory lane, which is where Sid Collins was able to interview Johnny Parsons. But one guy apparently who was none too pleased, Mike, he didn't want mics around there. I don't mean Mike Thompson. He didn't want microphones inside.
It doesn't sound like it. If you listen really carefully at the beginning of this clip, there's somebody who yells, "Hey, get that mic out of here. Get that microphone out of here."
You sure it wasn't the Mike Thompson of 1950?
Yeah, no, that's definitely not. But it is pretty funny. But what's interesting also about this clip is Sid did a couple times where he did the Victory Lane interview. And one year, he actually, the crush of the people kept pushing him closer and closer to the car. And he actually burned his leg on the exhaust pipe because they kept pushing him and pushing and pushing him, and he's doing the interview and he can't yell out in pain or, you know, yell get this guy out of here like that guy does at the beginning of this clip. And he actually got a burn on his leg from being pushed up against the hot exhaust pipe during the Victory Lane interview. So Sid was a total professional at all times.
The 1950 Victory Lane interview, Sid Collins, Johnny Parsons, a guy that didn't want microphones around.
We'll give you the other men who placed in the race in just a moment, but I think we're going to switch you down to Victory Lane now, where the big trophy and the big kiss are about to be given to Johnny Parsons. Come in, Sid Collins, in Victory Lane.
Parsons are taking a great big kiss from Miss Barbara Stanwyck, and now we're going to move over here with our microphone while Wilbur Shaw moves in with this water from Wilbur Silver Goblin. Wilbur, would you help us move in there to Johnny so we can get him on coast to coast? Another great big kiss coming in here from Barbara Stanwyck. She's really hanging on. That's the fourth one she's given now. Johnny, just have another word coast to coast, our mutual microphone.
Barbara? Well, I'm awfully glad that we won the race, but as I said before, I'm sorry it rained. But that's about all I got to say.
You're kind of tired after that race and after those kisses.
Yes. Oh, I love the kisses.
Are you going to run that again?
Yeah.
All right, let's have one for the microphone here, for the television cameras here, and our microphone coast to coast on YouTube, shall we?
Okay.
All right, and there's Barbara Stanwyck over there. She's giving Wilbur a great big wink or two, and also several kisses for Johnny Parsons. Now she has her arms around him now for the MGM movie cameras, as well as all of the photographers down here from the various press services, the various news, which you'll be seeing around the country in the next several weeks. And Johnny Parsons really looks happy, dressed here in his blue outfit and his yellow Winds friction proofing special. The big Borg Warner trophy is right back here behind them, and now they're getting more pictures of Johnny Parsons, Barbara Stanwyck, and Wilbur Shaw. And these photographers just can't be satisfied. More and more pictures all the time. And Johnny Parsons really looks just as clean and just as ambitious and anxious to win the race as before he started. And now he's shaking hands with the boys in his group. And a great big kiss goes also here to some of the fellas in the crew who've helped bring this Winds friction proofing special, the 1949 Triple A champion Johnny Parsons, to victory in the 500-mile Memorial Day race. That's the story from Victory Lane.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, in listening to that clip with Sid Collins, I think one of the things that it shows, not just his awareness of everything going on and being able to create that theater of the mind, but also for Sid Collins, knowing and being well-versed on which television stations or networks, which microphones, which cameras are around. That seems to be pretty on par with Sid Collins just in terms of his overall awareness of the opportunities of platform, if you will, for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and for his work getting itself into the American culture.
Absolutely. I mean, preparation was Sid's middle name, basically. I mean, he prepared and prepared and prepared. And so when he had those opportunities, you're right. I mean, he was able to say, you know, there's Barbara Stanwyck with whoever that person is. And here are these different stations and all the different photographers and you know, identifying all these different people in victory lane. It's all preparation because Sid was an absolute professional and preparation was something that was so important to Sid.
And that preparation would, of course, lead to, by the time he became the chief announcer in 1951, a position he would hold for essentially a quarter century. Each and every year at the end of the race broadcast, he would have a prepared statement and message to send everybody off, if you will, into the summertime until they would, via the means of radio and the Indianapolis 500, meet again. And he did that, of course, as he did each and every year in 1976. It was unknown that that would be the final time at that time that Sid Collins would say that goodbye, but we'll let you hear it when we return to Beyond the Break.
In the construction business and tired of dealing with the indifference of big corporate suppliers, Quality Supply and Tool on South Harding Street understands. For over 25 years, owner Kevin Ane has had a different approach.
We at Quality Supply and Tool take pride in being a locally owned family business committed to service. And every customer's needs are different, and we truly believe in shaping our business to our customers' needs. That's what separates us from the competition.
That's Quality Supply and Tool with additional locations in Bloomington and Jeffersonville to serve Hoosiers better. Partner with Quality Supply and Tool and think outside the box. Store.
Penguins can't fly. Ostriches can't fly. And if your Florida license or ID card isn't Real ID compliant by May 7th, then neither can you. Real ID compliant licenses and ID cards feature a gold star in the upper right corner. If yours doesn't have one by May 7th, you can't board commercial aircraft or gain access to any federal facilities. To obtain a Real ID for the first time, you must visit a driver's license service center in person. For full details, visit flhsmv.gov/realid. Paid for by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
This is Beyond the Bricks, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Now stay tuned for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Treat your family to a flavor leader, Stark & Wetzel Trophy Loaf. Named in honor of the famous Stark & Wetzel Trophy, awarded to the 500-mile Speedway's Rookie of the Year. Like all Stark & Wetzel luncheon meats, Trophy Loaf is guaranteed good. Made of fine U.S. government-inspected ham, deliciously chopped and seasoned. A sure winner for parties, picnics, snacks, and sandwiches. Look for Trophy Loaf at your dealers now. Remember, in luncheon meat, in any meat, you get the best of it with Stark & Wetzel.
For good meat, the best to eat is Stark & Wetzel meat.
Sid Collins, one of his famous ads from the Indianapolis 500 radio archive, Stark & Wetzel Trophy Loaf. Jake Query, Mike Thompson, Landon Coons here as well. It is Beyond the Bricks from the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. Taking a look back, it's Sid Collins who would become the chief announcer of the Indianapolis 500 race radio broadcast in 1951. He would hold that title until 1976 with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. And at the end of each year, he would salute and say goodbye, if you will, to all of the listeners until the year's following race. He did that in 1976. And as we mentioned, he passed away on this date in 1977, meaning that 76 goodbye would be the final for Sid Collins.
And now this final thought for our winner. Enthusiasm with wisdom will carry a man further than any amount of intellect without it. The men who have most powerfully influenced the world have not been so much men of genius as they have been men of strong conviction with an enduring capacity for work coupled with enthusiasm and determination. Johnny Rutherford showed these qualities today in becoming victorious over the Indianapolis 500. Each year, many of you write asking for the sign-off quote, such as the one I just recited. If you wish a copy, send a self-addressed stamped envelope along with your request to me, care of Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Indianapolis, Indiana. Sid Collins, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Indianapolis. Be sure to include a self-addressed stamped envelope. So until next May, this is Sid Collins, the voice of the 500, wishing you good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. evening, depending upon where in the world you are right now. We're here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway at the crossroads of America. Goodbye.
The 500, the 500, the greatest race in the world. From the old meatball till the race is done, it's thrill after thrill after thrill. The 500, the 500, the biggest and best of them all. And until that checkered flag's unfurled, it's the greatest, greatest, greatest.
Network.
1976, Sid Collins, and then after a relatively short illness, he would pass away May the 2nd of 1977, handing the reins, Mike, then over to Paul Page, who would carry on a tremendous legacy from Sid Collins.
Absolutely, and I think you said something really important at the beginning of the show, that it's important for us to shout out and to honor Sid every year on this day, and I think that's something we should absolutely do, and people should, you know, Donald always would say at the end of races, thank you, Sid, and I think we all should say thank you, Sid.
Indeed, and it has been a pleasure once again to bring you another episode of Beyond the Bricks.
Penguins can't fly. Ostriches can't fly. And if your Florida license or ID card isn't Real ID compliant by May 7th, then neither can you. Real ID compliant licenses and ID cards feature a gold star in the upper right corner. If yours doesn't have one by May 7th, you can't board commercial aircraft or gain access to any federal facilities. To obtain a Real ID for the first time, you must visit a driver's license service center in person. For full details, visit flhsmv.gov/realid. Paid for by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.